We're living in a very strange time. If you haven't noticed, you will, but I'm sure everyone has. There's a passage in Scripture. It's found in Ezekiel chapter 33. And we have to wonder, why is this here? And should we regard it as applying to us today? Because we don't have these kind of functions ourselves. We expect our military and our intelligence services to be on top of this issue. But in Ezekiel 33, it says, "Son of man, speak to the children of your people and say unto them, when I bring the sword upon a land, if the people of the land take a man of their coasts and set him for their watchman, if when he sees the sword come upon the land, if he blows the trumpet, and if he warns the people, then whoever hears the sound of the trumpet and takes not warning, if the sword come and take him away, his blood shall be upon his own head. He heard the sound of the trumpet and took not warning. His blood shall be upon him. But he that takes warning shall deliver his soul. But if the watchman see the sword come and blow not the trumpet, and the people be not warned, if the sword come and take any person from among them, he is taken away in his iniquity, but his blood will I require at the watchman's hand. So thou, O son of man, I have set you a watchman unto the house of Israel. Therefore you shall hear the word at my mouth, and warn them from me." Question is, who is this message addressed to? Is this just to a select few who are set up to do this warning? Does that obligation cease because there are individuals assigned to that task? Does that absolve the rest of us? That's a question I want to carry through this message today. Having a watchman illustrates a community welfare concern. And it also illustrates a defense network. Are we to warn just ourselves? Is our obligation limited? The picture here in Ezekiel 33 describes a life-threatening situation. Not so much spiritual considerations. But there's more than one kind of warfare. How would we rate our society as it relates to God's law? And that'll be an important question further on here. But one important thing to notice is that responsibility shifts from the watchman to the hearer once the warning has been issued. Not all people are primary watchmen. However, some of us can be contributors to the overall watch. It's important that we be aware that there even is a need for a watchman. Ephesians 5, verses 14 to 15, is addressed to each one of us. And it's in a similar context. Ephesians 5, verses 14 and 15. "Wherefore," he says, "awake, you that sleepest, and arise from the dead, and Christ shall give you light. See then that you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, We are admonished to be circumspect, particularly in all of those things that matter. All of us are obligated to assess the correctness of the warning signs that come. We're all obligated to compare and assess the situation around us. There's two major participants here, and that's brought out in the Ezekiel passage. There is the warner, and there is the warnee. There is a mutual responsibility there. But we must be sufficiently aware to be able to assess the warnings that were given. Not all warnings are legitimate. Not all prognostications describe correct things. We have to have a sense for what is correct and what is not. And where does that sense come from? We'll get to that. Doubts can be a major factor in causing a dangerous disregard. We can minimize. We're told something, this is going to happen, there's this danger over here. We can minimize that in our minds and go our ways just as though no warning had ever been issued. And then again, we have those warnings that are not valid anyway. How do we know? It's important to walk circumspectly, looking around, getting the sense of what's real, what's right, and what isn't. When we have doubts, all of that is challenged. Any warning that we get can be a challenge in our own minds. We can disregard any warnings. On top of that, there's agents of doubt operating in our societies. Doubt serves their agendas. Their agenda is to suppress the truth. Having been looking into many things in the last few months, I've come to realize that there are reports out there that are purported to be put there by the people that we would think are the righteous, and they're actually false reports put out as though it were them that aren't true at all, to cast doubt upon the sources that are true. You may have noticed that. And if you haven't, I expect sooner or later you will. We can't know what's true from just the plain, straightforward reporting. We need to have a sense. And where do we get that sense? Believe it or not, it can come from God's Word. When we hear false warnings over and over again, it can embed in people an enduring doubtfulness. Then we have the aspect of fear. A lot of people operate largely on fears. Sooner or later, we can realize, hopefully, that we were fearful inappropriately. We were fearful for nothing. Fear is our worst motivator. It disengages healthy thinking. When we live in fearfulness, we can distort our assessment of what we're hearing. Carrying anxieties can influence our subconscious. People who are giving the warnings must not induce panic conditions. That can happen. People love to be heard, and in enticing people to listen, they use sensationalism. Sensationalism attracts hearers, but it doesn't necessarily represent the facts. But when people are disappointed over and over again, it creates doubts. We need a solid anchor, an anchor point, to know how to assess the conditions in which we live. Hebrews 6:19 addresses that. Hebrews 6. In verse 18, it talks about holding to the hope that is set before us. We have a hope. Which hope we have, verse 19, as an anchor of the soul, both sure and steadfast, and which enters into that within the veil. It's basically telling us Christ, our awareness of Him, our relationship with Him, gives us an anchor of the soul. It's an anchor point. It's a reference point on which we can order our lives and our thinking and how we respond to the world around us. In John 18:36, Christ describes a time. He says, "If my kingdom were of this world, then would my servants fight." What kind of a fight would that be? We know that He is going to, with His army, conquer all evil. So where do His servants fit in here? What kind of a fight? What is the time frame of that fight? Well, throughout time, God's servants will retain their resistance to falsehoods and destructive trends. Being generally familiar with Bible prophecy can instill a reassurance because we know generally how things are going to work out. We know what the major concerns, the major factors are going to be. So it's important to have a sense at least. No one will understand it perfectly, but it's important to have a sense of Bible prophecy. Another one of those anchor points. We live in a world right now where there is major spiritual turmoil. Informational distortions are all over the place. And a lot of our news is purposely deceptive. That's a startling realization when it hits us. We're being told stuff that is purposely designed to mislead, to divert our thinking from what is actually happening. Some things we have to learn the hard way. It's not always going to be easy. We're not always going to have clear facts given to us where we don't even need to think, where we don't even need to evaluate. It's not going to happen that way. Some things we have to learn the hard way. And experience can be the most cruel teacher at times. But what about being watchmen? Where does our responsibility fall? Are we to be watchmen ourselves, both to one another and to those around us? Each of us are called to be lights in the world. That's not an assignment given to somebody else where we can just hang in the shadow. Each of us are called to be lights to our friends and family. We're to shine our light forward, not in people's faces. Many times hiking on a trail and it gets dark, you don't shine the flashlight on the people. You shine the light on the trail ahead. That's how it has to be. We can't just blast people with light right in their face. We have to point the way. We have to lead by putting the light on the path. There is coming, sooner or later, at the second coming, or possibly sooner, there is going to come a period of awareness. People are going to become aware of what the truth is. And it's going to disorient some people. A lot of people like to see a sign. They want to see this or that before they believe. Well, there are incessant signs. What we call signs of the times. Matthew 16, Jesus addressed this. Not something new, Matthew 16. This has always been. Verse 3. Start in verse 2. And he answered and said to them, when it is evening, you say, it will be fair weather, for the sky is red. And in the morning, if it will be foul weather today, for the sky is red and lowering. O you hypocrites, you can discern the face of the sky, but you cannot discern the signs of the times. Still, the prevailing condition in the world. We don't always recognize the signs of the times, what's happening. Then we have those people who suppress the truth in unrighteousness. Romans 1:18 talks about that. George Orwell said that the further a society drifts from the truth, the more they will despise those who speak it. Again, not something new. Plato said, no one is more hated than he that speaks the truth. Always been, it seems. In Isaiah 58, God tells us, cry aloud, spare not, tell my people their sins. And frankly, it's our people's sins right now that have brought us to the condition that we're in. A lot of things are coming out. A lot of things are being revealed. Things that we never would have known in a different age, but we have these things called laptops. And those laptops are finding their way into the wrong hands, according to the laptop owner. But what can you do? We're beginning to understand what's really going on in this world. And more is going to come out. We need to know who the synagogue of Satan is. And that group is mentioned in Revelation 2, verse 9, and Revelation 3, verse 9. We need to know who those who destroy the earth are. Because those people are going to be dealt with at the second coming. Revelation 11, 18 explains what he is going to do to those who destroy the earth. We need to know who those who forsake the holy covenant are. And Daniel 11, verses 30 and 32 talks about them. Again, major political forces that are going to be in operation in the end time. Ephesians 2:2 tells us that there is a spirit who now works in the children of disobedience. Do we recognize that there is a spirit working behind the scenes? And that spirit has agents, people that we would know and recognize their names, agents working for that spirit of disobedience. Back to the question, what personal responsibility do we as individuals have toward the world? We expect to have watchmen among us, but are we collectively watchmen to the world? There's an important development coming. It's prophesied. It's in Revelation 11. It's going to cause this world to become awestruck. The reaction towards these individuals is going to be worldwide and vicious. But they are God's two witnesses. We look forward to that time when God's truth is going to be broadcast. It's going to dominate the media like other minor stories do right now. We like to think the two witnesses are going to be out there on an evangelistic campaign, going to cause a lot of conversions. There might be some. There might be people who are going to become motivated to a greater degree than they were before. But I don't expect that the two witnesses are going to be evangelizing per se. I'm more inclined to think that they're going to be warning the world of the consequences of their sins. Will the two witnesses reveal the hidden activities of the corrupt? And you have to wonder what's going on at the present time. Is the groundwork being laid for those two witnesses in that very activity to expose the sins of the corrupt in our society? Will they be watchmen to us, but rather a warning to the world? The two witnesses are going to seriously upset society. And I recommend that you read the first part of Revelation 11 about them. It gives us a very vivid picture of how the world is going to react. 3.5 years they're going to be telling the world their sins. Will the world repent? I think we know the answer. But they're going to seriously upset society. They're going to activate the consciousness of those who know and activate the reaction against them of those who they are speaking to. There's a lot going on in this world that's not being reported. Have you noticed the number of earthquakes lately? For a time, I kept downloading the daily reports on the number of earthquakes, and it struck me how few of them are being reported. And I only took note of those above, you know, 5 and up. There have been hundreds in the last few months. Now, earthquakes are a major component in Bible prophecy. It's one of the things we're to look for. Are they being reported? Not very much. Do you know how many volcanoes are active right now? Have you heard anything on the news about volcanoes? There's 3 right now pumping out huge amounts of smoke. But in the last 2 or 3 months, there have been 26 volcanoes that have become active or semi-active. Some of them that hadn't been operational for 5,000 years, some in China, for example. There's one in Canada. There's 2 or 3 on the west coast of South America. There's one in the Philippines, several in the Philippines out in that area. Do we hear about them? No, we're too fixed on another important topic. I'm sure everyone knows what that is. In Luke 19:13, we're told to occupy till I come. 19:13. Starting in verse 12. He said, therefore, a certain nobleman went into a far country to receive for himself a kingdom, obviously referring to himself, and to return. And he called his 10 servants and delivered them 10 pounds and said unto them, occupy till I come. Now that's a message to us. As we're called, we're given talents. Talents are important. Occupy till I come is obviously an instruction to make use of the talents that we're given. We are to be engaged in spiritual matters. Engaged, involved, doing it, using what we're given. Question is, are we willing to take on the responsibility? Because a watchman has a very severe responsibility. And it's a responsibility assigned by God. We need to ask, how does God's inspiration factor in? Without it, where are we? Now, in this world, we have what we would regard as secular watchmen. And I'm kind of surprised at the evangelical community how perceptive they are in many important areas. They don't understand the truth as we understand it. They don't have the doctrines all squared away necessarily. But in certain important areas, they're very perceptive. In our secular world, we have another kind of watchmen of a sort who are active in analyzing our political scene. They're all of certain degree of benefit to us to give us the sense of what's going on. And at the same time, there are deceivers active in our political scene. We need to keep that in mind always. Are we paying attention to our secular watchmen? Some of them are more relevant than even those that we would regard as our national ministry. There's been a long-standing program going on. This is not something new. The groundwork was laid a generation and more ago. And the first aspect of that was our being dumbed down. That was the first assault. It set the stage. And nowhere do we find a greater degree of dumbness than in religion, in education, and in politics. We've been electing idiots for decades. And it seems the worst of the worst are so firmly entrenched, we can't get rid of them. I think you know what I mean. Now this passage in Ezekiel, the watchman on the wall passage, refers directly to military intelligence. It describes a foreign army coming to conquer. But we're in a type of warfare of an unseen nature. It's a spiritual warfare as well. Not saying that there won't be also direct military involvements. But the warfare that we need to be most concerned about is the warfare of an unseen nature. Years ago, we were told that we should watch world news. Many of us did. But we didn't necessarily know what we were looking at or what we should be looking for. Because back then we had no idea, 40 years ago, we had no idea how far, how crazy things could get. We didn't know what to look for, really. We had no idea back then. But the major attack that has come is focused on the truth. The truth is what's being assaulted right now. Back a couple of elections ago, we heard about this thing about people who hold to their religion and their guns. We thought that was just a slogan. We thought that was just a little insult. No, it was a warning of an agenda. What is under attack right now? Second Amendment and that aspect of the First, religion and guns. It's not just a political slogan. It's an intent to destroy those factors, those elements that would prevent them from what they're trying to do. We need to catch, we need to understand the sense of that. There is a spiritual threat. There is a political threat. And there is the potential of a military threat. Bible prophecy ties those all together. Prophecy generally describes political developments. It alludes to spirit forces driving what's happening. There is a spirit world. There is a spirit force that is changing the way people think, the way society thinks. So much today is obvious to those who are aware, but most people are not aware. There are so many things that are way beyond our comprehension level. It's almost like functioning in a demonic world. It's overwhelming, the stuff that's going on that we don't even hear about, that we don't have a clue about. It's in another dimension. Now, all of this emphasizes the need for us to put on the whole armor of God that we read about in Ephesians 6. Put on the whole armor of God. Now, not all of those items of armor are defensive. Some are offensive as well. We need to be active soldiers. I'm going to count on you being familiar with Ephesians 6, so let's go to Romans 13:12. Romans 13:12. The night is far spent. The day is at hand. Let us therefore cast off the works of darkness and let us put on the armor of light. One of the most important aspects of the armor of God is the armor of light. Being able to see through the darkness. 2 Corinthians 6, 7. 2 Corinthians 6, 7. By the word of truth, by the power of God, by the armor of righteousness on the right hand and on the left, by honor and dishonor, by evil report and good report, as deceivers and yet true. As unknown and yet well known, as dying and behold we live, as chastened and not killed, as sorrowful yet always rejoicing, as poor yet making many rich, as having nothing and yet possessing all things. O you Corinthians, our mouth is open unto you, our heart is enlarged. Kind of sets the scene for the world that we live in. Every form of deception is being thrown before us in ever-increasing complexity. It's important that we have spiritual discernment, not just news analysis, but spiritual discernment. Understanding can be tainted by a perceptual gift. We can misinterpret what we're hearing. not seeing it in its correct sense. When we draw close to God, we take on the mind of God. In Luke 21:36, there is this, Luke 21:36. And it's a message to each one of us. It says, "Watch you therefore, and pray always that you may be accounted worthy to escape all these things that shall come to pass, and to stand before the Son of Man." We're told to watch. Each one of us is to be a watchman, at least for ourselves, and to what degree we can to be a watchman on behalf of others. But notice it's connected with being accounted worthy to escape. Worthy to escape. Now we'll notice that one of the aspects, the concluding aspect of the armor of God, is praying always. And that's what this is asking us to do. We are to be watchmen, being close to God and having the mind of God. Jesus said, "My sheep will hear my voice." And it requires we be in a listening mode. Primary attacks with the latest events in the world have been on religious gatherings. Have you noticed that? You've heard about the situations in California where ministers have been fined and arrested. In Canada, ministers have been jailed for holding a religious service. Canada, you wouldn't think that of them. It's not a nice country up there. Not anything like what we think of them. It's an attack against religion. Now, it may be subtle, it may be roundabout, but it's one of the attacks that's come upon us. Did it affect us in any way? I think we know the answer. When a warning is issued, it doesn't necessarily end the enemy's plan. When that plan is exposed, it doesn't necessarily end it. But we must respond appropriately. The nature of this warfare is novel, unlike anything we've ever seen before, unlike anything we would have conceived. We're living in a shadow war. And like I said before, almost like being in a spirit dimension. Maybe it is. Machiavelli once said, "Never attempt to win by force what can be won by deception." That seems to be the game plan these days. The attacks are creeping subtleties, like the frog in hot water. Deceptions put out that are supported by other deceptions. It's multi-level. There's a subtle encouragement to divide people and to cause us to hate one another. Have you noticed that? How hateful the atmosphere has become of those on this side and those on that side. Have you noticed that? It's part of the plan. There's no lack of evidence that really strange things are going on. It's not so simple as an advancing army. We can comprehend that. An invading force coming toward us, we can understand that. But when it's unseen, when it's subtle, when it's at the spiritual level, not so easy. We have false watchers out there ramping up the panic level. Right now it's about health. Revelation 13 tells us another form is coming where it's going to be about commerce. People are not going to be able to engage in commerce. They're not going to be able to buy and sell unless they comply with a certain program. Do we see anything like that coming? Do we see even a possibility of such a thing? There should be ample evidence right now. It is the intent of what we could call black forces to conquer for the sake of control. World control is the obsession. Going back to verse 7 of Ezekiel 33, the concluding verse that I read before, "So you, O son of man, I have set you a watchman unto the house of Israel. Therefore, you shall hear the word at my mouth and warn them from me." There is that statement from Christ where he says, "Well done, thou good and faithful servant." We tend to think of that in the sense of complying with God's laws. Well, I think it would apply in this activity also, being good and faithful, and presenting the warning in the appropriate places to the appropriate people in this time. That statement has strong implications. Our warfare is spiritual, and it is on many levels. Let me conclude with the subject of putting on the whole armor of God. "Finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord and in the power of his might. Put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil." This is the level of our warfare. "For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places." Do we see where the battle is? "Wherefore, take unto you the whole armor of God, that you may be able to stand, to withstand in the evil day, and having done all, to stand. Stand therefore, having your loins girt about with truth, having on the breastplate of righteousness, and your feet shod with the preparation of the gospel of peace." That's offensive, not just defensive. "Above all, taking the shield of faith, wherewith you shall be able to quench all the fiery darts of the wicked." It's telling us over and over again, this battle is spiritual. "And take the helmet of salvation and the sword of the Spirit, which is the word of God." Again, offensive, not defensive. "Praying always, with all prayer and supplication in the Spirit, and watching thereunto with all perseverance and supplication for all saints." That is our God-given assignment.